I'm wrestling, do not weep for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 77 of the T-Row and Funky Show. Brought to you, as always, by Defend Soap. Defend what you've built in Dahlemer mats. And Tommy, what are you doing to celebrate America's birthday today?
Well, I did a little parade and breakfast action at my sister's house. And then I got a nice little run in, which is not really common for me.
So you're telling us you're training for the Midlands.
Training for the Midlands, you know. I mean, we're leaving the options open, Ben. I'm like a free agent.
Sure.
You know. What about you, man? What are you doing?
Well, I don't like the parade thing. Maybe that's kind of un-American of me, but, you know, like, I'm so busy when I – well, you're busy too, but when I can just spend a morning at home, that's really nice. Yeah. So we did fireworks the other night. They do them on the lakes around here, and then we're going to do fireworks again tonight. So we did do two sets of fireworks, and we had a little social event at my house. We're doing a open mat at my brother's wrestling academy here at 3:30 and a little grill out afterwards. So that's kind of a – kind of an American thing to do.
I would imagine that 4th of July around Wisconsin and the lakes and stuff is very American pie-ish, if you will.
Yeah. It's funny because every single lake has their own fireworks, you know. So there are – you can literally – one of my buddies who he enjoys socializing too much, I think he went to a fireworks every night for 5 or 6 nights in a row.
There you go.
I mean, that's hardcore, right?
That's American right there.
That is American. So – So yeah, so but I got my. I think this is the biggest break I had since August last year. Between you know not really training or having any camps or academies. So you know we did a couple open.
How long have you been on break then?
Well, I finished camp on the 30th, which was last Friday. Came home. We did an open mat on Saturday morning, so that's kind of fun. You know,
right,
we had probably
right.
about 20 guys show up. Right. Didn't do anything the rest of that day. And then Tyron Woodley actually came up. He's starting his training camp for Damian Maya. So I worked out with him Sunday right. afternoon. But it was fun. You know, I had my kids there. He had his kids there. And they were all playing. And then yesterday we just had an open mat. But so I've had a few open mats and a few workouts. So for me, that's pretty much nothing.
Yeah, and are you grinding starting tomorrow, or when do you get back, you know, scrapping?
Well, I get a few more days off, so the 5th and 6th, we have regular practice, and I'll get my workouts in. The 7th and 8th, I have some workouts, and I have a camp. We get the Elite Cradle Camp. So, Tommy, maybe you could fly up for that, and then you can learn how to pin people at Midlands. You don't have to wrestle too long.
You know, I should come on. I mean, if I could cradle some dudes, you know, put some tight half Nelsons on them, whatever it might be, maybe the Midlands would be a little bit more appealing to me.
There you go. So it's 4 sessions, nothing but cradles.
How old do you have to be to really maximize, but actually get value out of the camp?
Well, those ones are 5th or 12th grade. So okay. By the time they're in 5th grade, usually for the most part, they can pay attention, you know, for long periods of time.
Going into 5th grade or going into 5th?
Going into 5th.
Okay, got it. So that's my dog age.
So, yeah, we did 4 of those. The elite camps are kind of a new addition in the last couple of years. We did 1 upper body, 1 cradle camp, 1 that's crab riding, and then 1 that was leg ride defense and crab ride defense. So, yeah.
That's all.
Bunch of wrestling, short period of time. They come in, knock it out. So I got that, and then Sunday I go up north, and then I got a little camp in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, with my buddy Crash Train, who they do some gear with the Rudis. And,
nice.
Yep, and then WWF camp starts, and then I go right to Fargo. So then it's boom, bam, pow.
WWF camp? What is that?
That's the Wisconsin Wrestling Federation.
I was going to say, geez, you're up to a lot of cool stuff, man.
No, WWF is the Wisconsin Wrestling Federation. So their little camp. And then, you know, we're so close, we just take a bus from the camp to Fargo.
How far is the drive?
Well, so the camp is held on, like, the border of Minnesota, Wisconsin, in a small town called River Falls. And so the drive from there is just around 4 hours to Fargo.
When I went to Fargo as a wrestler and I went a couple times as a coach, every year we would stop in Madison, work out in the Wisconsin wrestling room and then proceed on. So that was our overnight was in Madison.
And that was actually where we had camp also at that time. So I do recall you guys stopping in a few times.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So next week when we tape this, I'll be probably either at camp or probably do it at Fargo because I'll probably be too busy. And then the week after, we get to discuss Fargo, which is always a really fun tournament.
Right. And as we told our viewers last episode that Kyle Snyder would come on, Kyle Snyder is actually available, but I haven't even told him this yet. But I think it's better if we talk about recruiting this episode and save Kyle Snyder for even more of a dead period than we've got right now, because it's kind of a dead period, but it is the start of the official recruiting season. So what do you say?
Yeah, that's fine. And actually, I got to – don't tell my kids. Well, actually, this episode won't be published by the time they can hear this, so it doesn't matter. But I did have a few extra Kyle Snyder shirts from when came up and did the camp, and I figured there's not much more American than Kyle Snyder, so anyone who shows up for open mat today will get an extra free Kyle Snyder shirt.
There you go. That's awesome, man.
Boom. Yeah.
I speaking of American, and I know we're going to talk about recruiting, but I was talking to my 7-year-old son who follows wrestling very closely on YouTube, and I was explaining to him today who Sadulayev is.
Uh-oh.
In relation to Kyle Snyder. He was getting pretty jacked up. He asked me if it was, he goes, is it like Rocky and Drago? I said, yeah, buddy, it's kind of like Rocky and Drago this
there
summer.
There you go.
It's going to be a great match if it happens.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, while Sadulayev has looked fairly invincible in recent years, he did not look invincible at the Russian Nationals. I mean, someone could definitely argue that they could have gave a caution in two, and he would have been then down, I believe, 9-8. You know, not saying he couldn't have went back and got a takedown, but it definitely did look like he got a favorable call or two there in the second period to help him get the W.
No doubt.
Well, all right. Well, I do like that you wanted to get in the recruiting stuff. And we're not going to do a deep dive like the guys on FRL do. But, you know, I want to say last summer, Tommy, we actually did a 3-part series on recruiting because we kind of got into it and people enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
I'm going to scroll back and find out what that is so I can kind of reference that.
Well, I think we told recruiting stories one entire episode, which was great.
That was fun.
Being recruits, being hosts, recruiting kids. We had a couple stories where we left the person in question nameless, so on and so forth. I know we did an episode dedicated to that only.
Let me see. We did three parts. So it's episode 32, 33, and 34. And actually, episode number 32, which is our part one on recruiting, was one of our most listened to episodes besides, save David Taylor and our top 10 list were both fairly well listened to.
Right.
So you guys can always go back and check those out as well. So let's get into it, Tommy. You kind of made the list of what we're going to talk about today. So I guess number one, you got, for those of you who don't know, July 1 is the first date in which college coaches can officially call and visit recruits. That being said, there are some workarounds there. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and we touched on this last year, and I think we can maybe dive deeper, talk a little bit more about it this year. But, you know, back when you and I were in school, definitely when I was in school, what am I, 5 years older than you, Ben, or four?
Three.
Either way.
Three or two.
Okay. We're basically the same age. I mean, back when I was in school, you know, you would get letters. It didn't matter how good of a recruit you were either. You'd get letters that kind of implied interest from the institution that sent you the letter. But you didn't really know how interested somebody was in you until July 1st.
Correct.
Because of technology, you know, believe it or not, email was not commonplace. There was no internet video type of way to stay in touch and connected in the wrestling community. No social media. So these college coaches watched you literally maybe 3 times prior to July 1st, and they knew who you are. They probably called around and stuff. And then on July 1st, they called you And if they were serious, they called you on July 1st. And you got to gauge how interested somebody was in you. They probably got to learn more about you than they ever have.
Yeah, and they could make their visit on July 1st.
They could make their visit on July 1st, which is what they did. And it was just a huge kickoff to the recruiting season. And it really is like nothing much was – there wasn't much settled in the whole recruiting landscape. And then the dominoes fell starting July 1st all the way through November, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as of July 1st, there was almost no commitments. I mean, if there was one or two a season, it was because someone had a brother that was at that university, right, and they knew they were going to go or something. But, Tommy, I just counted on our list of top 25. There is already 13 commitments out of the top 25.
Which is greater than 50%. And then if you look at the top 10 on the big board, the top 10 of those 25 – 70%, 7 out of 10 guys, yes, have already committed to their school. So you could say that the recruiting game, July 1st, is extremely anticlimactic. It doesn't mean what it used to mean. In fact, it probably means close to nothing other than you are allowed to walk into their house and sit with them. Yep. And then you can sponsor an official visit and pay for their visit, so on and so forth. But it's very anticlimactic. It's not what it used to be. It's just a continuation of what's already been taking place via texting, social media. They call you, so you're allowed to pick up.
Yeah.
Then you encourage them to drive to campus. They do an official visit. Then you got this RTC dynamic where if they live within like 3,000 miles of your school, they can pick
up. That is an exaggeration, people.
Yeah, but you got all these things where July 1st is it doesn't mean anything anymore. Yeah.
So the way it mostly works, right, the way it mostly works is high school kids can – tweet, text, private message, right? Coaches can't really private message back, but so a kid can say, hey, coach, I'm going to call at X time, right? Or right, whatever. And then so that way it can happen, right? Whereas in the past, especially when people only had home phones, which wasn't a long time ago, Tom, again, when me and you were in high school, was yep, not a long time ago. Man, it's hard to catch someone at home, right?
Yeah, yeah,
only push
yeah,
you, and it doesn't matter if you leave a voicemail; they can't call back, and so now it's just so easy for kids to get on the phone with coaches.
So a lot of it has to do with technology. The other thing is that with video analysis so common, I mean, kids used to send VHS tapes to college coaches.
I did it. I tell a story about it every single camp I do.
So with video analysis, these coaches, their minds get made up quicker. Because of the accessibility to watch these kids wrestle in abundance. So, you've got like we've mentioned like six or seven really big factors as to why these decisions are getting made early. And so that's the why. And I think we all understand that. What I wanted to talk to you about, Ben, is I know why it's happening, sure, but I don't think it's very healthy.
I hate it.
Yeah, I think it's terrible.
I mean, if we're talking a couple months before July 1st, okay, I can say whatever on that one.
Right.
But, where I really can't stand it is this freshman and sophomore thing, and then they break their commitment, and then people try to make them feel guilty about it. It's just so stupid. I mean, there should really be a rule where you can't acknowledge a verbal commitment until you enter maybe your junior season or,
yeah,
something to that effect where it is later. And, I understand why these kids do it. The coach tells them somehow they get a good deal. They want some attention because it is an attention thing. They want to secure your place with that program. But we've hit on this point. It's bad all around. It's bad for the programs because they don't know what they're getting at an early age, right? It's bad for the kids because they're forced to make an early decision what they're going to do. It's bad for other kids because now other kids may not be getting recruited who deserve so because that kid committed and then he's going to flake out later. I mean, the Mejia thing with Iowa is the perfect example. Mejia committed to Iowa. Spencer
Lee. Yeah.
What?
Talking about Teasdale?
No, Mejia from California. Mejia committed to Iowa. Lee and Teasdale commit, so he decommits. He commits to Illinois. Then Teasdale decommits from Iowa, and Mejia commits back to Iowa.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's just like, holy crap. So I don't know that, I hate bureaucracy and I hate more rules, But it's really getting to the point where it's super obnoxious, all these kids committing super early.
Well, the other thing, too, is that another reason it's bad is because it's bad because bad parents are allowed to be bad parents. Because if your 14-year-old child is forced to make a college decision, if you're a bad parent, or whether you're a bad or good parent, you have to mitigate the situation and help facilitate the decision. You're not going to let a 14-year-old kid decide what's best for them at age 18 through 23. So a bad parent gets to be involved, right, and make the decision on behalf of the kid. Yes. And a good parent has to be involved even though they don't want to be, because they're not going to watch their 14-year-old child think for themselves when a 45-year-old man is and I'm 14 is maybe a little bit exaggerated, but okay,
it could be 14, 15, that's for sure.
15, you know, and they're negotiating and bargaining with these kids, and so the parent is going to step in even if they're a good parent. So it's just all around a very, in my opinion, toxic situation. I think that if there were college coaches listening to this, they would probably say you're exaggerating this, but
no, Tommy, I think a lot of them agree, but they're saying, well, X, Y, and Z are going to do it, so if I don't do it, I'm left behind.
Well, there's truth in that. I mean, and this is what they do for a living. I mean, so this is not a joke for them. This is how they put food on the table for their family. So if they got to go as low in age as recruiting freshman. A 15-year-old, if they got to do that to make a living and compete, then they're going to do it. I mean, I get that. I would be the same way. But I just think it's a very – I don't like it. It's happening in other sports. It's actually happening worse in other sports. So it's not just wrestling. And I got a lot of beef with it. One thing that I've always thought of, and I think I brought it up once on our podcast, Ben, but and this is more like just the rules of engagement with negotiation, like, you know, Donald Trump's book, The Art of the Deal. You know, you're looking deep into the whole dynamic of this. And I think there's some hugely blue chip recruits that kind of know this intuitively. But riddle me this, Ben. If you're a blue chip recruit,
okay.
Let's say you're 15. You're going into your sophomore year, which is a pretty normal age to get recruited.
Yep. Got it.
Going into your sophomore year, and one of the top eight schools in the country, or three of the top eight schools, are offering you a full ride, and they're basically saying, "This offer stands for another 3 months, and then I've got to go another direction." Now,
this is what's happening. So just to be for our viewers, this is a scenario that happens very frequently. This is exactly what's happening.
This is extremely common. So if I'm not 15, if I'm a 35-year-old man and I'm doing like a business deal on similar platforms,
yes.
In my mind, I'm thinking this. If you want me now this badly, you're going to want me in 2 years. So what you're telling me about the money going elsewhere, so on and so forth, is a bluff.
It is to a certain when they're that young. Yes, it's a bluff, Tommy. When they get a little, I mean, I just had a junior that I coached kind of go through this process where a bunch of schools made him an offer, and it was like, you know, and I said to him, because he kind of let them all sit for a while, and I said, hey man, you know, at some point, you know, a couple of these schools have choices after you. You know, they have a 2, 3, or 4, and you know, we're getting into where you're going to be a senior now, and if they have money, that money to spend, say they have a 1.2 scholarships left, right? They're gonna on the class of 2018. They're gonna spend it. They have to, right? And if they start seeing other people be pulled off the board, and so now you're their one, but their two and their four got pulled off the board, they're gonna start getting nervous and saying, "Well, shit, I better go get the 3 or the 5 because I might be left with nobody."
I think that's where it's not like there's part. It's not a 100% bluff, because to your point, they could be very serious in saying, if you say no, I'm going to go get another guy, and then if he says yes, that money I had allocated for you goes to him at your weight class. So that part is real. I think what is a bluff is that if you wanted to go to that school 2 years from that date, they would find a way to get you the money. But you might have a tough wrestle off, or it might be crowded at your weight class.
Well, the other thing, Tommy, about the kind of just to differentiate what you and I said. I said that was a junior going to be a senior, right? And you were kind of talking about freshman, sophomore. So the thing with the freshman, sophomore, the money is, you're right, they don't know. I mean, think about how many kids drop out of school or quit the team within the first year. So, you know, if you're a freshman going to be a sophomore, they still have two classes that are going to come in before you. Yep. No, three. I'm sorry. Three classes that are going to come before you. Hell, Tommy, I started with four. I don't know about you. I started with 14 kids in my recruiting class. We ended up with four that graduated from Missouri, three that were on the team. Yep. So, I mean, a lot
of let's take a couple hypothetical scenarios that we've dealt with in, with athletes that we know. Mark Hall, he's a freshman, going to be a sophomore. He's a two-time Minnesota State champ already. He's won the Cadet World Championships. He's a blue chip. And Kale Sanderson tells a guy like Mark Hall, hey, I got a full ride, but if you don't take it,
I'm gonna
go get Verclaren. Well, okay, so Mark Hall doesn't take it. Kale gets a commit from Verclaren. In 2 years, if Mark Hall still hasn't committed and he calls Kale up and says, I want to go to Penn State, is he saying no?
Tommy, I think that's a little unfair because Mark Hall's far out there. Pick like a two or a three or four at the weight class.
I know. I get it. I said a few examples, Ben.
Fair enough.
All right, so let's take some other guys.
Okay, so what does Mark Hall say? I want to come there and I need a lot of money?
I think you can do whatever you want. I think that what some of these kids don't realize is I would say that there's about 15 kids, and it's not many, year that have a lot of chips.
Yes.
They have a lot of chips.
You're correct.
And they don't use them.
Yeah.
They get manipulated. It's mental manipulation because they're young, inexperienced. Their parents are inexperienced, and they're committing when they're 15.
Yeah, you're right on that for sure.
So, anyways, and let's go into like a lower tier recruit, but still blue chip, a guy like Teasdale. You know, I think that those scenarios
he's pretty high. Let's see. Let me see. He's number three. Let's go a little lower. Let's say here I got one for you. We both know this guy, David Carr. He's sitting at number 14 on the big board right now.
That's a perfect example. I just think that it's anybody's going to take David Carr. Anybody that said that they'll go get, you know, 2 years ago, he hasn't.
What if they spent all their money, though?
I think you're still going to find a way to get David Carr. I mean, sure. I've seen David Carr wrestle, and if I'm a college coach, they just know how to scrap it together.
Yeah,
we don't need to get into the details of how, but a college coach knows how to scrape the money together to get a guy like David Carr.
Sure.
Okay. He will do it. You will not. If David Carr says, I want to come, I need a full ride. Now, if he's a total bimbo or a moron and needs 100%, 100%, not 89% or 93%, you know, then you might not be able to accommodate. But they will scrape it together and they will make it happen. I just know that if with a guy that good, you will make it happen. You won't say no to that.
Sure.
It's no different than a good sale. You know, if a good sale falls in your lap, no matter if you got to ask your company to go to the moon and back, if it's a good sale, you're going to take it. You are going to take it no matter what.
You're going to, when there's that good of a deal, people will find a way to make it happen.
Right.
All right. I got you. That's a very fair point to make.
Okay.
But I definitely do think kind of like what you're saying with the freshman, sophomore, the money on the table. It's like those coaches are shooting from the hip. They don't know what's going to be there in 2 years. You don't know who's going to want to transfer, who's going to drop out of school, who's going to fall in love with their high school girlfriend and leave school. You know, you just don't know.
So what do you if you were to pull the 78 D1 schools and their coaches, so you got you're working with 200 plus Division I coaches, what do you think they would say if you could manage develop a rule system that was enforced to regulate early commitments? What do you think what would the poll say? What do you think they would be saying?
I think they would say yes. Honestly, I think it would take a lot of pressure off of them.
Right.
Because here's the thing about it is, even once you get them to commit when they're younger, you still have to kind of recruit them, right? You can't just say, hey, this is locked up, this is done, because there's no rules against other people still calling them. And we've seen that happen, right? We saw that happen with Michael Beard, you know, going to Northwestern, changed his commitment to Penn State, and Kale never stopped recruiting him, never.
Right.
And so it's not like once they get these commitments, so these coaches are working extra, they're scrapping extra hard. So I think the majority of them, the sensible ones, would say, hey, yeah, let's cut back. Because if it's a fair playing field, everyone's going to play by it, right? But right now there's just so many ways around the rules that it's essentially like freaking open market, right?
Right. And one of my pet peeves, even with you and I with our podcast, is I hate complaining about something without a proposed solution.
Sure.
And I don't have one. So
I mean, the NCAA would just have to make a literal no contact rule. You can't freaking talk to them. You can't message them. You can't email them. I mean, that. But then again, you go, well, how do you police that, right? I mean, that because right. As we know, like I said, I hate bigger bureaucracies. And I mean, I want to say Missouri already has 9 or 10 people on staff for compliance at the university. I'm sure Ohio State's much larger. So to be spending, I mean, if we think of how much the athletic department is spending to do compliance on themselves, I mean, we're talking $1 million.
Right.
In Missouri, right? How much Ohio State's probably spending four, because them suckers love to break the rules.
Oh, geez. There we go.
They do, though. They do.
There we go.
Again, most of the rules are stupid. I mean, like giving away your ring for a tattoo. Like, hell, if you want to give away your damn ring for a tattoo, you should be able to do so.
Right.
It's
your
freaking ring.
Yep. Yep. So I think we covered the whole early commitment thing. I mean, we don't have an answer.
The answer would be a complete blackout on contact, which would be very difficult to police. But at least the rule would be there.
Would protect everybody. It really does protect everybody from, you know. I mean,
from a toxic system.
Yeah, just think of a normal D1 coach, and again, most of them are normal. Just think of how they feel when they've got some kid that doesn't even have his driver's license.
Yeah.
And they're like talking to him about winning Olympic gold medals and, you know, competing for NCAA titles, and he can't even smell, you know, it would be probably a little bit awkward. You know what I mean?
Yep. I agree. So we'll go blackout on recruiting. Let's scoot down your list. And now, what are you looking for in a top recruit? And this is funny, Tom, because I just read the book. So on my Mental Monday yesterday, I talked about it. I don't know if you checked that out, but I read the book Grit. I'm almost done. I think I have one or two chapters left. And actually, I literally was reading right before this podcast, and one of the statistics that I read was they did this little grid, and it's how many extracurriculars a kid participates in and how successful they are. And so they can get up to 6 points. So they score 0 out of 1, 1 out of 6, 0 out of 6, 1 out of 6, et cetera, et cetera. And they're talking about dropout rates. So they studied, I think it was 1,400 kids. And if someone got a 6 out of 6 on the grit scale, and it's a very simple scale, right? They were 69% to be enrolled after 2 years of college. If they got a 0 out of 6, they were 16% to be enrolled in college after 2 years. That's freaking mind blowing. I mean, that's an increase of 450% just from the grid scale. So, when I'm thinking of what would you be looking for in a recruit, that's a huge one for me. And I think how I try to do that, or you know, how I did try to do that when I was recruiting college kids, is I always like to try to find a couple of their losses. Everyone looks good when you're winning, you know, everyone looks good. But how do you react? How do you fight when you're losing? How do you mix it up? I love seeing that, and I think that really tells me a lot about somebody. So that was one of the huge things that I always did when recruiting. I would always try to find the matches where they did lose so I can see what their fight was like and what the reaction. And I think that gives a really good indication of what someone's going to be like.
Yep. I think I agree with you. If I had to pick one, let's call it, you know, you got all these, you got, you know, let's say there's like 8 levers to pull.
Yeah.
That would indicate somebody's going to be successful at the next level. You know, one of them is technical skill. One of them is experience. One of them is work ethic. One of them's grit. One of them is ability to overcome adversity. You know, we could name them all. We could, you know, if you got these, let's say there's 8 levers, and I don't know that there's 8, but let's pretend that there's 8. In my opinion, if you're, you know, it just depends on how good are you are at each of the 8. You know, because if you're not, if you're pretty good at overcoming adversity and you're supremely talented and skilled, then since you're not really good at overcoming adversity, you still might be good at the collegiate level. So to me, it's like kind of a weighted scale based on 8 to 10 variables that are important. And I'm really kind of riding the fence here. I'm not giving you a straight answer. I sound like a politician.
Tommy, you would be a very good politician because you give these answers.
But what I'm getting
fairly
at.
Fairly frequently.
But what I'm getting is that I do think that that overall grit, if you will, which is most evident in failure and yes. And post failure, is probably the thing that to me is the single greatest indicator of getting it done at the next level, really in anything, whether it be, you know, not just wrestling. You know what I mean? So, you know, how you absorb and react to failure, it's almost like how do you do while you're failing and after you fail? And to me, if you can become an expert at channeling that experience and making it positive for you and learning from it and actually being better by virtue of experiencing it, I mean, you can hold the world by the you know what's. So to me, I do think that's the single greatest indicator. I like watching and seeing how they do in failure. I also think you can see how people deal with, you know, quote, failure, Ben. Just how do they deal with a tough practice? How do they how do they deal with the struggle in a tough workout? And I think that's why college coaches do like watching these guys work out.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like a glimpse of how they would deal with a major setback. It's like, okay, practice is tough.
But it is hard to see these guys in practice. I mean, that's why, you know, I guess they're doing some of these what the hell do they call them? Compound combine. The compound combine.
Gotcha.
Compound college combine. I don't really love them because I think they are kind of I don't want to say unnecessary, but college coaches do get to see athletes way more frequently, to our point earlier, whether it's on video or on Flow Wrestler or wherever it is, than they did 15 years ago. But, you know, getting to know a kid in person, the thing that I struggled about getting to know kids when I was recruiting at the college level is, man, it felt like everyone was lying to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, they know what you want to hear, right. Whether it's their parent, whether it's their high school coach, whether it's the kid, they know what you want to hear. They want to hear he's a hard worker, he's responsible, he's mature, right? They know you want, and so they tell you those things. So it's like I always tried to find a third party. If I knew another person in the area, if I knew I had a friend that you know coached at a rival team, I always tried to find someone else in that area so I could get a hopeful real answer on the kid and kind of take the aggregate of everyone's answers, because especially when we're talking about small schools who don't send a lot of kids D1, they're all going to tell you what you want to hear. And it's obvious what every coach wants to hear, right?
Of course.
So whether that's actually the truth or not, that was the tough part for me. Is am I getting the truth right now from these people, or am I getting a load of shit? You know?
Right. Well, I think that speaking to the combine thing, I mean, I actually think they do serve somewhat of a purpose, Ben, just because, well, one, geographically speaking, especially, I know that there's a big one in Atlanta. Those kids in the Southeast don't get enough looks, and Southeastern wrestling is getting a lot better. So to collect them all in one central location probably is accommodating for a lot of college coaches. But I just think that, you know, because there are some times, Ben, where you see guys that do have – like that momentous, you know, grit where they know how to get tough for like 30 or 40 seconds in a tough match, and they're talented. Sure. So they're good at the high school level, but do they have the staying power? Can they train? I mean, can they actually train? And so
because you're right. Cause that toughness in a match and the toughness over the course of 5 years of your college career they're absolutely two different things.
And the truth is you need both. I mean, if you only have one, you're not going to get it done in college.
Correct.
You need both, but I think that, you know, there is something to be said for knowing how a guy can go through a training session. And then even more importantly, how do they do that over the course of time? That's the hardest thing to identify for me, is that these kids would come in, they're nice kids, positive attitudes, come from good families, you know, really no blemishes on their rap sheet, so to speak, and they're accomplished, but wrestling, you know, it's college wrestling, man. It's like Groundhog Day. And you know that, and I know that. And so when Groundhog Day sets in and it's just, you know, you're clashing heads with tough guys every day, and it just never fails, rain or shine, you have to meet that mental and physical test on a daily basis. That's when people really get revealed to you. And how do you find, I mean, How can you – and that to me, that's grit. And how do you identify that?
That's serious grit.
And how do you identify that in the recruiting process? I don't know. I don't know how you could possibly do it. That's why I like reading that book, Grit.
Yeah.
Is it Amy Duckworth or Angela Duckworth? Either
Angela
way.
Angela Duckworth.
I thought it was a phenomenal book. And anyways, we're rambling here, but that's
– No, I mean it's all valid stuff. And yeah, she does really simplify. I mean, she makes really simple grit skills that, you know, when you see the 69% versus the 16% that I was talking about a little bit ago, you see that it's a very freaking simple test, but you see the difference it makes, you know? And that's right, kind of what we're talking about. And, yeah, I always thought, you know, when I was a college recruiting, again, because of all the lies that you hear from everybody, that if there was some kind of list, simple list you could make like this, that it would, you know, where they could check off and you could kind of compare it on a scale, that it would be really, really effective. So let's go. We're kind of running long here, so I'm going to cut one of these out if that's okay with you. So let's go top five. We want to talk about the recruits that have already committed in the class of 2018 and the recruits who have not committed yet in the class of 2018. So, you know what, and I screenshot this list to you from Flo. And
Flo Big Board.
Flo Big Board, top 100. And when I did this, you know, I knew this, Tommy. I already knew it. But when you see it again, it's mind-blowing. I can't imagine anything like this has ever happened before. It's never happened. Has it ever happened before? So
crazy.
Penn State has number 3. Number 4, number 5, number 7, number 11, and number 13, and they're all different weight classes.
I will tell you there is one year, yeah, it's incredible. There is one year where Minnesota had, and this is like, we're talking,
I recall that year.
18, 19 years ago. It was an unbelievable, it was the class before Damian Hahn.
Yeah.
And I know Jared Lawrence was in the class. Luke Becker was in the class. Yep. Garrett Lowney was in the class.
Yep.
Was Leroy Vega in that class? It was.
Ooh, I don't know.
It was stacked. It was similar to this, but you know, I don't remember exactly how they are ranked to completely know that. But this is incredible. I mean, you got Teasdale, Beard, Whitlake, Nevels. Is there anybody else?
Yes, sir. There's six of them. There is. Teasdale, Beard, Whitlake, Bravo Young, Nevels, and Joe Lee.
That's scary.
Yeah, it's very scary. Hold on, I'm trying to look up this recruiting class. Damn it, I don't think I can find it. Son of a guy. I know which class it is. The Lawrence class that you are talking about. That's correct.
Right. Yeah, Lawrence, Becker, Lowney. Those were big ones. I mean, but there's other big ones that I'm just forgetting about.
Yeah. Lawrence, anyway. Becker, Lowney. Okay. So, yeah. So, anyway. So, when you look at the list, the thing that sticks out to you right away is, holy crap, Penn State. You know, and I said, who else has more than one in the top 25? And the answer to that is Ohio State's the only one. They have number 10, Gavin Hoffman, and they have number 20, Jaden Maddox. And then Northwestern actually has 4 in the top 44, I believe. They got 21, Ryan Coley. 28, Anthony Cassiope, 35, Jack Jessen, and 43, Eric Bylek. I don't know him. So what, you know, it's like, holy crap, and they're already this good, and they already have really good recruits. But like, when this class comes through, my God, if they are doing the same things then that they're doing now, that's a very scary proposition.
Who do you think is the best out of the Penn State recruits?
Oh, I think so. Out of all these, I really genuinely think Gable Stevenson is the can't miss.
No, I'm talking about out of Penn State's recruits.
Out of Penn State's recruits. Okay, so obviously they're all very good. I'm going to go with Michael Beard. I'm very impressed with him, and I think really, really high-level upperweights are harder to come by than really, really high-level middleweights, lower and middle.
I've heard a lot about that kid. I've only watched him wrestle once, so I can't really speak completely to that. But I'm going with Bravo Young.
You think Bravo Young's that good?
He's freakish. I think he's the most talented in the group, with the exception of that Ja'Cory Teamer. That's the guy that trains with Arajow.
Yeah, Rujo. Ja'Cory Teamer. He's going to Arizona State.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with Bravo Young.
Okay, and best in the whole class, are you agreeing with me on Gable?
Yeah, it's I mean, I don't even like saying it. I mean, I guess I'm glad he's not going to Penn State, but he's going to Minnesota, which, by the way, they're doing Eggum's doing a good job. But, yeah, he is the can't miss.
Yeah, and so number
everybody else on there, I guess I could envision them kind of fading into they're not such a no brainer.
Got it. And I agree. You know what's funny, and I also maybe you would have a better handle on this. I can't remember a recruiting class ever where the number one and the number two are both heavyweights. I remember all the way back to Steve Mocco when people were ranking him above. And this is when I was from the Midwest, so and there's no video like we were talking about. So right. I'd never seen Steve wrestle. So this must have been like freshman or sophomore rankings, and so I was a year younger, so I was eighth grader freshman. And people were ranking him above Israel Martinez and Marcus Levesser, and I'm like, there is no freaking way heavyweight is better than these guys, you know? But then, obviously, he was. So do you remember one where there's two heavyweights, number one and two?
I'm trying to think. I don't think I have. I will say this, and Gable Stevens is not an example of what I'm about to say, but how many heavyweights have been ranked number one or two that just
flopped? So many.
Flopped. And I think that has a lot to do with if you're in a big athletic heavyweight,
yes,
you can be very good. But in college, the rubber meets the road with being able to train as well. And some of these guys, don't want to train.
The other thing is just, physical maturity. So many more high school kids, so many more kids grow into their bodies.
That's another good point is that, these kids might not be the strongest and fastest. They're the most technical. And then other guys grow into their body and they dominate them.
Yeah. So I think that definitely has an effect, but I'm so impressed with Gable Stevenson. I think you put him in the NCAAs next year, he's a decently high All-American.
I would say we talked about this I think a few episodes ago, but I mean obviously Snyder and Kuhn I would put ahead of Stevenson right now.
Yeah.
What other guys would you for sure put ahead of Stevenson?
Shoot, I gotta go. I don't have the freaking college rankings. The NCAA, but there's not a lot. We'll just
yeah. There's not a lot that are just ahead of them in my opinion right now, right this second.
Yes.
Snyder and Kuhn for sure, and then I can't think of any others.
Yes. Okay, so Mason Paris. I don't even know who's recruiting him, but does Ohio State even bother because they got Singletary and Gavin Hoffman?
I don't think so. By the way, I do like that Hoffman kid. I watched him on video. He's pretty good. How does he do with beard? Because they're both from the same state and they're the same weight.
I don't, and I could obviously be wrong. I don't recall them wrestling at a major national tournament. And I could be wrong on that, but I don't recall that happening.
No, they've locked horns at least.
I'm sure they have. I haven't seen it.
Right.
Beard has wrestled a little smaller. I think he's usually been 82 and Hoffman's usually been 95. So I think they were a little separately sized.
Hey, so full transparency here. I didn't even know who Mason Paris was until he won the Flow Nationals.
I didn't either. No idea.
And I watched him a little bit. What do you think of him?
I think he's a freakish athlete. I would be interested – again, I don't know a huge amount about him. I didn't see him till Flow. I would be interested to see what his training situation is. You know, does he have good partners? Does he have good coaches right now?
Right.
I think that's going to be a good indicator of how far he's going to grow once he gets to college.
He is a perfect example of a guy. I mean, he looks the part. There's no doubt about it. He's freakishly talented. He's at a weight class where that's hard to find. He's the guy that you want to see him train. I would love to see him go through a two-hour workout with just decent guys, not guys that are better than him. If he was a grinder through those training sessions, then – my opinion of him would change drastically because I was thoroughly impressed watching him at the Flow Nationals. Thoroughly impressed.
Yeah, I agree. But again, I don't know what kind of
it's not enough data. There's just not enough information on him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I totally agree. So I don't know what his situation is. There isn't any. I know he plays a lot of other sports. Obviously, he's super good at football. So I guess that's one of those where I do wish there was a way to see him train, see a little more of him. I think he said he's going to go to Fargo, so that would be awesome if him and Gable were able to lock some horns at Fargo. If not, hopefully Willie will hook them up at Who's number one? Yes.
But Mason will be playing football.
Ah, jeez Louise.
So it's got to go down in Fargo.
So it has to go down in Fargo.
Is Gable even going to go to Fargo if he's
getting ready? I don't know. Probably not. So, yeah, so maybe it won't happen.
What if the AWA sponsor, you know, you're equidistant. Why don't you sponsor a little horn locking?
I was actually going to call, so I want to do Tommy.
T-Row and Funky stream.
There we go.
Best out of three.
Well, I want to do a who's number Wisconsin version of who's number one before we do a Wisconsin preseason state. And it's actually funny because we actually allow other states to come. We call it the preseason state at the beginning, so we still call it that, even though like Illinois and Michigan kids come. Right. But I would like to do a who's number one. So I actually got I'm going to put a call in sometime soon to the WIA, the governing body of Wisconsin Scholastic Sports, to see what the rule set on those type of things are.
We should fly them in to AWA. I'll come up there. We'll go in a group of three through a training session. Stream it.
That would get a lot of views, Tommy.
Yeah, I need to go to the doctor the next day.
Yeah, you'd be exhausted.
You know that. You wrestled me in my wrestling room in the basement.
Yeah, you'd be very tired. Those guys are very, very big. okay, so let's go. Where are we going to go with this? I got something. I'm gonna go off script for 1 minute, Tommy.
There's only one thing I want to do. Okay. We should go through our top, and we don't have to do it right now. But we should go through our top five uncommitted.
But I don't. Are we talking about where they're gonna go, or who we think our top five are?
Who do we think are the five best guys that are not?
Okay. Committed. So do you have your list right now?
No. You could do your rant. I just wanted to tell you I wanted to finish.
I got a good question. So let's. If you got your five, well, I'll go against my five.
Okay.
I'm going to stick with Mason Paris as number one. Okay. Sasso scares me because he's really good, but he has shown some lapses in training. No, most of all, he got exhausted against my guy in the semis at Flow Nationals, and my guy took him down three or four times in the third period. Right. He still lost, but and then I've heard his grades are questionable. So he scares me. So for those reasons, I'm bumping him down a little bit. I'm going to go Joey Silva, number two. I'm also not that impressed with Trent Hidley, who would be next on the list. So I'm actually going to go way down the list with the guy I'm impressed with. I'm going to go Will Luan from Montini Catholic, Izzy style, number three. I'm going to come back to Sasso, number four. And I'm going to go David Carr, number five.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, Luan's way down there. He's down there at 29. He just won UWWs in both style in very tough brackets. I think he's really, really good. He is eligible for UWW cadets, which means he's young for his grade. And obviously, I think that extra year has a big impact, especially how kids are viewed earlier in their high school career. If they got an extra year, it does make a big difference.
Yep. I'll be honest with you, Ben. I'm going to give you five, but my four and five are guesses based on a little bit of what I've watched about them and what I've heard. But my number one, you're going to just call me an Ohio homer.
Ah, duh.
But I'm going with David Carr.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
It's not that bad. But he's got great pedigree. He's raised right, and he's raised in a wrestling family. I saw how he handled adversity, Ben. With basically, he got drubbed by Jaden Maddox in a midseason tournament.
Yeah,
on the heels of a tough Ironman, and I thought that the way he handled himself and the way that he came back and kind of dominated Jaden Maddox in the state finals is impressive. The other thing that I like is David Carr. To me, is a wrestling junkie. He goes to all of the events year round, probably as much, if not more, than everybody on this list.
No, that's right.
So when you combine the fact that he comes from a pedigree where he's, you know the types of discussions that are in the home that he's having, that's probably plays to a huge advantage at the next level for him.
Yeah.
The fact that I did watch him handle, he showed a little grit on how he conducted himself and how he reacted to tough stuff. I'm going with him number one. Mason Paris, number two. But I'm concerned about that. It's just he was so freakish and so dominant. I just don't know anything about the guy. I know nothing.
That's fair. You know who he reminds me of a little bit, Tommy? And this might be a little too young for you. Maybe not. Do you remember a guy named Matt Fields?
Yeah, from I wrestled him. I wrestled. He's the guy that I was wrestling when I broke my ankle in the NCAA quarters.
Matt, you're that young?
Fields.
Matt Fields from Iowa. Wow, I guess.
No. I never wrestled Fields from Iowa.
Yeah.
I almost did, I think. No, I did not wrestle him.
Okay, so he was...
I'm thinking Matt Feast. I'm sorry, Matt Feast.
Feast, yeah. No, Matt Fields from Iowa. He was freakishly powerful for a high school kid.
Yep.
Mature beyond his years. I mean, he looked like an adult when he was a freshman or sophomore in high school.
He wasn't very athletic.
He
wasn't very athletic.
Well, he looked athletic.
He sure
he
did.
Really did. But, he sure did. But, you know, he was definitely number one in his class for heavyweights.
Yep.
And he had a decent college career. I think he was a two-time All-American, but he never lived up to what people thought he was going to be because he was that freakish athlete before, you know?
Oh, yeah. I agree with you. I'm with you. And it could be the same type of thing. Although I think this Mason Paris guy has better lateral movement. Now, it's all coming back to me because he used to wrestle Kirk Nail from Ohio State.
Exactly.
So, but Mason Paris has much more better lateral. Much more better lateral movement, yes.
All right, that's two. Who's three?
Sasso.
Okay.
I like Sasso. I watched him at the Fila trials. He got smashed. I forget who smashed him, but still like him for college prospects. And then after that, Ben, honestly, I know a lot of other guys, but they're already committed. So I feel bad even saying four and five.
Okay. Hey, so here's I'm going to just divert you real quick. Here's what I'm going to ask you. Cale Sanderson let his contract go without re-signing, you know? So he's kind of playing hardball with Penn State right now. Is that awesome or what?
It's awesome.
I love it.
It's phenomenal. I think it's great. I think every other college coach should be sending Cale text messages saying, hey, thanks, bud.
Yes.
Keep holding out. Appreciate it.
Seriously.
Thanks a lot. Kevin Dresser, $300,000 a year compensation package at Iowa State. Everybody should be thanking him.
Yep.
You know, this is how you drive the market, you know? And to me, it's a little bit of a Fugazi market because how many of these sports are making money? I mean, you know, the fact that they're getting paid that much and their department, so to speak, their team doesn't generate money profit for the school. I mean, everybody should be happy about this.
Yeah, 100%.
I think you could argue that Penn State Wrestling directly at least break evens with all their ticket sales.
They got it, right? I mean, they're selling on every single event. I know they charge quite a bit for those tickets that are down on the floor.
And then indirectly with the success they've had, 6 out of 7 national titles, you know, the whole fundraising department at Penn State, the capital campaigns that they have for other sports, the imagery that they use, the inspiration they use to get multimillionaires to contribute to Penn State, the success of the wrestling team plays a significant role in getting that money.
100%.
So that's where Cale's doing the right thing, holding out. I appreciate that he's doing that.
Yeah, go Cale. All right. Hey, so I got an open mat in 35 minutes, which means I got to leave in about 10 minutes.
Get her done, my brother.
Well, that was fun. I will talk to you next week, Mr. Tommy.
Sounds good.
See you, bud.
See you.
You are listening to the T. Rowe and Fungi Show, and it is brought to you by Defend Soap. Defend what you've built. Tommy, I got to say, I tried these products. He shipped me a box. I love them. I've had, if you know me, you know I've had ringworm issues for a long time. So I'm looking forward to putting these in my repertoire and hoping the ringworm does not come back ever.
No doubt, Ben. And to top that off, the company was created by wrestlers. Guy Seiko wrestled at Cleveland State University. His son was an All-American in Virginia. So these people really get it. They know what the wrestling community needs.